Hello, Tiff Davey here, today's host on the Behind the Collective podcast. We wanted to take this opportunity to thank the Australian Beef Breeders Association for their ongoing support of the Livestock Collective. As a not-for-profit, we rely on support from organisations like them to do what we do. Today's episode is as real as it gets. We're recording with Brad in the Northern Territory amongst the cattle lanes at the Catherine Show. This episode talks all things Brahmins, leadership, life in the North, and his passion for the agricultural industry. First question, hopefully the easiest, is tell us who are you and about yourself.
I'm Brad Inglis from Sturt Plains Station. We're 360 k south of Catherine. We're a family run place. Lisa Dyer, my partner, and my two kids, Jed and Charlotte.
And so what's your why? Why do you do what you do? And it's a big question.
Why? I've been, probably since 2001, in like the similar area, I suppose, in Northern Territory, in stock camps and cattle, and became to love Brahmin cattle. Fortunate enough to meet Lisa, my partner, and we haven't had time to get married. We've been engaged for, I'll get in trouble now, but well over a decade, 15 years. And then, I think Lisa has the same passions as I do. Had the opportunity through her great family to do what we've split off and subdivided Sturt Plains and off Hayfield. And I just love Brahmin cattle and love the area. I've just been in that area a long time, and you go away and you come back a little, get 100 k's either side of where we live, and I'll still feel good. So
yeah, and so people describe it as a bug, and you caught the bug, but could you put that into words, you know, what it is specifically, like the cattle? You know, we're sitting here at the Catherine Show amongst some horse poo and some
I think definitely lucky enough to work for the right people who instilled that sort of passion and care, and I don't know, I probably worked for the wrong people, and then I worked for the right people, but all working for the right wrong people, I probably learnt just as much in a good way. Really appreciated the right things I got taught, and I think that's what fueled the fire a bit, and I think Lisa was the same. Like, we had similar views, similar things, and once we seen improvement and all that, it just fueled the fire, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I want to touch on that, like, leadership in the Northern Territory, because I, as an outsider looking in, like, it's built, it's a state and an industry built on beef and Brahmins, but I also think people. So I want to go more into that. But how did you end up here? You're a boy from Sydney, I believe a plumber by trade. Tell us about the journey getting here.
When I was doing my apprenticeship, my family, mother's side, had a bit of a rural background, and cousins and family and farms and that, New South Wales. And then when I was doing my apprenticeship, I became friends with people in southern Queensland who are horse cattle people, and it sort of started from there, real good blokes. And then I think I just got out of the towns and out of that hustle and bustle, and I just, I don't know, my dad, give him credit, he's my best mate, made me finish my trade, which I was the last sort of 12, and that's what I sort of talked to a lot of young blokes who are sort of at that second, third, fourth year apprentice. I just say, don't you quit, you know, it's the best thing I ever did. Yeah, I think once I got out of the city and got that bush lifestyle, and then I just sort of randomly had friends who were from the area down there that were managing up here and got a start up here, and then, yeah, it started from there, so, and then never left.
And if you could look back on your younger self, what would be your advice starting out and getting that start? How would you encourage people to get that start?
I know this sounds probably bad to some people, probably in a management role or whatever, but if I was a young person, I wouldn't waste my time somewhere that you think that you either weren't learning or you're getting treated poorly. If you touch wood, back in the day, like back then, most places were pretty good. I worked for Ken Warren and Brett Kraft, and that was, he looked after me and the stock, our whole stock camp, like Tammy Crooko and people like that, and it was still in the industry, you know, and it was amazing to see that one manager had an impact on so many people that are still in the industry. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, absolutely. So,
you
know, yeah.
And that's where you talk about leadership. And I think just giving them young people a bit of care, a bit of your time, a bit of passion, and a bit of incentive, I think goes a long way. And 20, nearly 25 years later, nearly everyone in that stock camp is still involved in ag,
yeah.
You know?
So you think it's, yeah, important to identify, I suppose, there is still poor leadership within the industry and to look for those good leaders. And
oh, yeah. I swear by leading by example. Like, I would never do anything that... I would never not do something that, you know... I if there's something that's a shit job, I'll do it. And I'm still that way. Like, you know, I want staff to follow me, lead, like, go with me. And we've had the same crew last year. One girl, Kel, she's been with us 5 years. And not... I think it's just... I don't know, I'm starting to get bloody bit worn out, but I don't know. And explain to your people as you go, like the two girls that work for us last couple of years, like first day they come in the yards, they were just shit themselves, you know, they had a hand on the rail and Brahman cattle and oh my God, and now they get around and even, you know, you get truck drivers and all that go, how good, and these girls just walking around. And because we dip other people's cattle with a dipping yard we got, they're just walking around confident as. And I know they're not going to get hurt. And I know they're getting around cattle, reading cattle. And they're getting that passion and that drive for the industry. And, you know, whether they stay more, longer or whatever. But, you know, the way that I know that people look at them, they're going to get a job anyway.
Mm. You know, touching on the leadership thing, because the NT, for those who don't know, I would describe it's quite transient. You've got a lot of young people. Like, we're sitting here recording this at the Catherine Show. There's literally 1,000 ringers camped out here. The average age would probably be 25. What makes a good leader, do you think? And you've got stock camp managers, you've got managers, and there is quite a, I suppose, changeover in staff in those positions. So leadership of people is something I think that is important, because you're mentoring so many young people within the industry. You know, what makes that good leader?
Probably over the years I've seen blokes or head stock men or women, whoever it is, that sort of get into that next step, either a head stockman or a manager or whatever, and then they give away, like I said before, leading by example. Like, so I know there's managers and some jobs that you have to be like, you know, administration or office or whatever, but still get out there and get on the wiener cradle, like get there and get on a young horse or get on the mob of cattle. I think you got to get them young people to think, oh shit, he's handy. You know what I mean? Oh, I see what he gets. Like, explain things as you go. Like, every mob of cattle we block up, I'm going around talking to them girls like, so see that cow there, or remember that cow and calf, because 5K's up the road, we might have to cut her out and leave behind. Like, just all them little tiny things. And, you know, and I know we work for ourselves, like, so every dollar matters, and I'm not saying it doesn't in other businesses, but, you know, I want to have our brands right in our cattle. I want to have our dehorning right. I want to have all the little things that I'm probably a bit pedantic, but I don't know, that's what we do. And, like, you know, I'm hoping that all these young people that are over there partying and camp drafting or whatever, but instead of chasing cattle all day, come over and have a look at some breeder cattle, you know, like, it's all, the whole NT revolves around the bloody pastoral industry, and I think the cattle are important side of it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, on that, so for someone who doesn't know anything about the way the NT looks, I would describe it as being shaped by two seasons, the wet and the dry, and live export plays quite a key role in cattle operations up here. But can you talk us through what a typical year looks like for your enterprises and enterprises in the NT? And you touched on it, you have dipping yards, so it talks about that, but also, you know, the broader industry. What does a year look like in the NT?
Yeah, so we recently had an Australian Brahman Breeders Conference in Catherine, and a delegate of Queensland, New South Wales came up in a bus, and it was just good to show them that, you know, you can't just go around your 300 cows and every 4 weeks or every whatever. It's your dry season. Yeah, depending on your country, it starts, you know, your April, May, goes through to November, December, and you've got to get everything done in that period. And also, yeah, with our dipping yard, so it's sort of up to 50, 60,000 head a year will dip for other people, because they go south through the tick line, which is on our southern boundary. So our yards are a kilometre off the highway. So that's a plays a sometimes too major part in our business. Like, we've got to sort of get our own cattle work done, and we sort of got to juggle that around the dip. And most people are pretty good. We sort of usually now put a window in the diary and get our own stuff done, which we still don't rush. Yeah, and then the wet season, sort of get the boat in the water and go fishing. But no, there's still maintenance, and yeah, it might get a bit of rain, then it might rain for a month. So it's all, every wet season's different. So you sort of can't just go, oh, we're just going to pull up stumps in December and come back in April. There's still management over the wet. So yeah.
And because the land is, I would, you know, obviously, you know, more than me, varying in the NT. You've got your Downs Country down like near Elliot, but then you've also got rough, like more rugged, scrubbier country. So people use, you know, helicopters, they use quite big teams. How does that work? How do you go and find cows and bring them into the yards to then get them on the boat?
Yeah, so it depends, varies. Like different areas, but there's a lot of country in the Northern Territory that doesn't have surface water. So, it lucky enough at Sturt Plains, we do have some surface water, but we fence it off. They can access it, but we just fence it off, and we control our water. So every water at Sturt Plains is controlled. So we like either trap yards. We educate the cattle to use spears, which I've sort of designed myself, and so we haven't had an air helicopter in over 10 years. And we just have a little bit of infrastructure, maybe a laneway here or there, or trap yards, or holding paddocks and stuff like that. We sort of, I don't know, my brother-in-law had heli muster for over 15 years, and I'm not against helicopters at all. Like, even when the river country and all that kind of stuff, we used to coach a master block up. But finding that skill set, and yeah, I've been away from that area for a long time, but I think there's a lot of people out there that are sort of wanting to do it, but finding that skill set to do it is difficult, more and more difficult as it goes on. So, you know, these, oh, let helicopters put them in the yards. But I don't know, I'm sort of going, we have gone totally against all that kind of stuff. Like, we fence water holes off, we trap, and the mindset and the difference in our females and the productivity in our females. We don't lose any calves, we don't mismother anything. We just, every kilo we save on steers, every... You know, if I run 16 Ks over there, which I wouldn't be doing, or 20 Ks or whatever it is, and you got to get on a truck and then go to Darwin, but I suppose if you just walk and feed your way along to that yard, and you get in that yard and you go on to feed and you chilled out, and you're going to be a lot heavier by the time you get to Katherine Weybridge and you do Darwin. If you're talking 1,000 steers and you're talking 10 kilos at $3 or $4, it's a lot of money, and it's a lot of money to us, and plus 100% musters out of paddocks. Like, there's a lot of paddocks that get helicopters miss because it's thick timber or whatever, but if there's no surface water, use it to your advantage. And I know I'm talking stuff that a lot of people know, but I don't know.
No, I think it's important to, because we have a really diverse listener range, so some people don't know this, so it's really interesting. It's not all just helicopters up here running around with a bull catcher. There's more to it than that, which I think is an important conversation to have, because she's got this reputation for being a little bit wild. And I don't think the TV show territory.
It's not exciting.
But there is still husbandry. There is really, you know, at the end of it, you're making decisions based on animal husbandry, which I think is a really important conversation.
Absolutely. And like, if it's, I know it's not exciting probably to someone in Melbourne or Sydney, but it might be exciting to a young girl that's working somewhere that might be mustering, might be mistreating cattle or something like that. And if they can see something that's a bit kinder and a bit safer. Like, we're all going on about welfare and OH&S, and if we can put 1,000 cows through a yard or 500 cows, I don't like doing too big a mobs, but if you can do, have your cows poke through the yard and your wieners settle straight away, and there's no, all that cow's thinking about is a calf. And that's why I really enjoy it. I really, really enjoy it, and I really love seeing the girls that work for us enjoy it, and I love seeing that everyone's got a smile on their face. The cows aren't stressed. They mother up straight away, and we go back to the paddock. And yeah, I don't know. I really enjoy it, and I think a lot of young people. There's some people out there that want to enjoy it and want to learn more and want to get that different side of things and understand it.
Yeah. So we talk about stockmanship, and it's obviously really important in the NT. Because we're saying we don't look at the cattle every 3 days. Your enterprise isn't based on that. So, you know, why are you encouraging people to have revisiting these stockmanship skills? And, you know, what are the decisions you're making around animal husbandry?
I just think the benefits that I see with Brahman cattle, they're the easiest, in my opinion, they're the easiest cattle to handle. I see people come into a yard like they're going to play a game of footy. They get in the yard, they're amped up, they're going to this and that, and I just go, we look like you've had six schooners on a Sunday afternoon and chill out, and them old cows aren't going to worry about you. Like, if you're sitting at a bar and some bloke sneaks in, goes up the end of the bar, has a beer, that you don't notice him, but if some bloke that walks in is going to fight everyone, first thing you do is go, shit. So, I don't know. I think I just see so much, I don't know. Brahman cattle are a pretty productive animal in the right situation. And I think they get a pretty bit of a hard time from people who either, I don't know, looking for a quick fix or looking for a quick excuse. I think Brahmins get a fair cop of the blame, I think. We're not perfect, but there are some good cattle out there, especially in the Northern Territory. And I just think they're a magnificent animal and a productive business. Live export's a good business. I'm not worried about that. I think there's too many people in Indonesia, that 300 odd million, that need protein. If they eat half a kilo or more in a year, it's like 200,000 more head they're going to need or something like that.
And so talk us through the Brahmins, live export, and the top end. Why are you selling them to live export? Why aren't you just selling them to the local butcher shop?
Well, they handle the conditions in Indonesia. It's hot. That's what they want. Indonesia, over the last 30, 40 years, have worked out what they want and why they want it. They want lean meat. They want, you know, animals that are going to do the feed conversion. They handle the conditions. The ABBA's doing a trial now with about 400 odd steers at Bar Mount Feedlot in Queensland. They go through and they'll do meat kill grading, all that kind of stuff, and then which will be interesting because the Brahman breed's come a long way, and I think this whole MSA grading and hump height and all that kind of stuff's a bit unfair for quality Brahmins. The problem with Brahmins, you've got something out of a hill with a bit of a long ear in their class as a Brahmin, where you've got really high quality cattle that we've sold to bullock producers into Queensland, Alice Springs, and, you know, I think the quality's over the last 20, 30 years has gone through the roof.
Yeah, well, you're here. Well, tell us, what are you doing here at Catherine Show? I believe you
don't
bought
really
some
know, actually.
So tell us about that.
I'm starting to regret it, but no. It's good.
I'm sure everyone says it at this point. You've just had judging today and you've had to wash these cattle. Tell us about what that
is. Usually we just bring in a bloody couple of pens of bulls and chuck them in a pen and that's easy, but I'm leading one this year, which I don't know, see how we go. He might be leading me around, but I don't know. I think, you know, we use horses. I'm a mad horseman. I love horses. We don't use anything, no bikes, no nothing. And, you know, there's a lot of camp drafting and like, but I don't know. I just get around a cow and I really enjoy it, or a bull or a heifer. And I don't know. Oh, good. It's my little time out, I think. And but just to promote the breed and promote our business, promote our cattle and, you know, and help other people. Like, you know, got these other people here with good cattle. And I just think that's what our industry and this whole town would suffer without us. So I just think if we can promote some good cattle around the industry and let it know there is good cattle in the Northern Territory.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good thing, I think, having Brahmins here, because I know, like, I lived and worked in Catherine for a few years, and someone asked me in town at a council meeting what a Brahmin was. So I think it's just an important thing to have cattle on display at a local
auction. And I think there's this perception of Brahmins. Like, I've had people, like, probably the next couple of days or probably the same this year, come in and go, oh, you know, I didn't think you could eat these. Like, there's this whole stigma around it, and you know, I don't know, we take beef down to South Australia and trade it for King George Whiting, and all them fellas down there, they love it. Like, they reckon they've had beef like it, and it's crazy, hey. It's like, it's just and we're killing old bullocks or big fat cows and they love it, and it's beautiful, and the whole and that's what I'm probably trying to I'm not trying to do anything really, but just change the perception of Northern Territory and you know, probably, you know, this whole stigma and image of hard and fast and all that kind of stuff. Like, I think we can talk about fertility I'm not against any operation or any bull breeder or any sort of stud operation or any business, whatever that, but I think there's so much more to gain in Northern Australia just through a little bit of slowdown, a little bit of cow and calf, a little bit of stockmanship, like you said before. I think bring that a little bit back, and I think you'll start to see businesses realise, oh shit, our weaning percentages has just gone up, our calving percentages has just gone up, our mindset of our females, like, if I upset any woman that I've known in my life, they're not easy to handle. And Lisa dies only a little, but she's bloody... But you know what I mean? It's no different, mate. And it is no different. And I think, yeah, a little bit more slow down and invest in that. And I think a lot of people sort of...
And this is a big question. What do you think the future of the NT beef industry has in store? What's it going to look like?
I'm confident. I'm really confident. Like, I really respect Ross Ainsworth. And he said the other week at the Brahman conference that it was going to be $8 a kilo. And he's never been wrong yet. And he'd been around a long time. And I don't know. I just think depends what this federal government does. But hopefully, common sense prevails. Yeah, I don't know. I'm confident, mate. I really am. I just think, you know, you got some... It's a great place up here. It's great people. And I just think the Indonesia partnership, it's unbelievable. Like, it works. I can't see Brazil coming in. It's too far. And I just think if as long as our federal government backs us, I'm hoping, it's just going to get stronger and stronger.
This is circling back to something you said earlier about your business, your and Lisa's business, and how you've actually, it's unique, and correct me if I'm here, for the territory in the sense that you've built it from scratch. So through a succession, you got a part of a family station, Lisa's family station, you've built this business. Talk us through that. How did you get into the tick thing? So did you know that was going to be a part of the business? And what have some challenges been for you and Lisa?
Yeah, so... With our succession plan, we put a proposal to the family. So half of Sturt Plains is fully undeveloped. Onto the Beedaloo side, there was a highway fence, but there was nothing else over there. It was 500 square k's of country there, and then we had to build a homestead. There was nothing there. We had a doze, little doze, D4E, and doze a homestead, doze a road, and then we cleared the yard site. And we built the yard like we had a budget, and then we had to stick by that, and whatever cattle we had, we had to... make it go from that. And I think we had to build a set of yards for our own use, but I just thought, I just knew what the current dipping yards and that were, and I thought, we're right on the tick line, we're right on the highway. That was just the plan with that, and that's sort of a business in itself now. But probably just trying to prove to the family that it was going to work. And Lisa's mum and dad were awesome. Like, if it didn't work, we'd probably all still be together and whatever, it'd be a good spot to have a wiener camp or something.
Yeah.
Worst case. Yeah. But I don't know, I just knew it was going to work. I knew it would work. So we just did that. And but family's not easy, but we all still get on now and it's great. And we're all got our separate businesses and separate lands all being subdivided. Yeah, it's been a process, and Val's done an amazing job with that, dealing with, like, the subdivision process and all that, the government. Oh, it's been crazy, but, I don't know. I wouldn't build a new home. Like, I wouldn't start from scratch again, I know that.
So you're like a succession success story, and there's not, not everyone has a success story. So you're saying it was hard, but it was worth it now.
Oh, yeah. Now that you're at the other end. And, I mean, it was probably having that. And Lisa's so conservative with everything. Like, she was always, oh, shit. And I was like, no, we'll be right. Like, having to develop half the place and I don't know how many 100K plus of fencing and pickets. But even for everything from the sheds to the homestead to the taps to the gardens to the... I think it's a success story. I guarantee it definitely is a success story. And I think a lot of people wrote us off. We didn't have enough country. We didn't have enough cattle. Wah, wah, but I think we've changed the views of a few of them. Like, yeah. You know, you don't have to have 10,000 cows. And a lot of people think you do, but if you look after every kilo and every calf, it can be done.
Yeah, I think that's a great key message there. And do you reckon being a Sydney boy and just not having been born and bred into the industry, your perspective on animal husbandry and different things, do you think it was a good thing coming in, like, with a fresh perspective?
Probably, yeah. I'd say that, right, looking back.
Because I think a lot of people write themselves off before they've even begun because they're not born and bred into the industry. They're not, like a sixth generation grazier But I think there's strength in that because you're coming in with a different
point of view. I think you're right. I never really thought it like that, but I definitely, yeah. And like going back to them fellas that I did work for, probably a bit of work ethic, getting taught work ethic as you're younger from my dad, and I got from the blokes that did my apprenticeship with. I reckon some blokes up here were hard, but man, oh, when I was an apprentice, I still lose sleep over it. But I'll look back at them fellas and just coming in to have a bit of a backbone and bit of care, and I don't know. I think maybe coming in fresh was a good thing, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So your key takeaway or key message for any young person starting out, what would it be?
Try and find the right people to work for. Try and find people that care about animals. Try and, enjoy cattle as much as horses. I think, you know, like cattle can be enjoyable. Cattle have a side to them once you understand them that, I don't know, they're just as kind-eyed as a horse can be. And I think just try and get that bit of interest in the cattle side of things. I think it's an addiction, and I think there's a big opportunity for young people in this industry just to, a lot of people that second, third, fourth year, even I get phone calls, oh, I wonder if you had a job, I'm sort of working here that I've done 3 or 4 years, I just don't know where to go now, and there's a lot of that. I said, just, that's what I was saying, try and find the right people and you'll get there. There's opportunities. Yeah, I think it is. And that we need those people to come up, you know.
And so you're non-biased, of course, but you've made it clear you're a Brahmin man through and through. You're here camping next to your cattle for a few days to show off the breed. And, you know, what's your favourite thing about Brahmins?
Oh, I'll probably just suit the environment up here. They're really intelligent. They're easy to handle. When the going gets tough up here, because again, like, as you know, October, November, December, it's pretty hot and pretty hard. And then even when it does rain, the parasites, the flies, the midges, the mozzies, everything, and they just handle it. I don't know. I've seen some businesses up, long-term businesses up here. Some, like, you got the Heightsbury's, you got these people that Wave Hills, Killarney's, my mother-in-law's Fayfields, you got Bill, like Waterloo, these the high grade Brahmins, and they're successful businesses. And I think I'm not against. There's some good droughty herds. There's one at like Tom and Bev Stockwort, Sunday Creek. You got Fossil Downs over the west. You got the great Droughtmaster composite herds doing it for a long time. But I think, you know, I just love them, and there's nothing better than walking along with a mob of Brahmins when it's 40 degrees and they're just like, it's nothing to them.
And so if you could summarise it, what did you do wrong when you first started leading people, and what did you learn from that?
Oh, back in the day, I was pretty hard. Oh, I think I was pretty hard. I think a few people told me that, but I think that was that generation and that era. But I got a lot out of some people. But that's what I said. I led by example. I never did anything that I wouldn't expect someone else to do. And then, I think nowadays I've chilled out more, but I'll still...
So you reckon you've just chilled out a little bit? A bit more like your cows. You're just a bit more relaxed and less...
Yeah, but I think I had that... You had that pressure on you to succeed and that pressure on you to, you know, some manager's a bloke thinking you had to do this and had to do that. So you had that... Probably ego, I suppose. Not ego, well, pressure, or I don't know what the word is.
I think there is an element of, not, I don't know if it's ego, but you see there's like, I think people have it in their head what a good leader looks like, particularly in the NT, particularly in that environment. And with that, there is a pressure. And I think there is this, it's like subconscious, but you develop an ego. You see it, I see it all the time. And I see that a lot of them are just kids trying to work it out. But they've got this persona that they've got to be tough and they've got to act a certain way. And it's about having the conversation. It's like, you actually don't. Yeah.
That's it. And I don't think I've ever been... I've always said g'day to people and been friendly and all that. But in the work position, I was either working for a bloke, like, oh, no, I'll prove him wrong, or I'm not going to let him beat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been beaten by anyone, but not in a bad... not in a wanker way, but more of a oh yeah, righto, whatever. I've had some blokes who try and put you on horses that would not ride, and you just say, oh, whatever, and we just get it done. But yeah, I think you're dead right. But I mean, I'd rather try and make people confident in horses, confident in cattle, confident in a mob of cattle, confident walking cattle, like explaining me being there, not just over the radio in the office, you know what I mean? Like, I just, and I enjoy it still. I really enjoy it. I love cattle. I love mustering. I love drafting. I love, I don't love dipping so much. Nah, it's all right. It's good. But even then, even when the cows going south, like the girls, we sort of, they come, some might be a bit highly strung. By the time they leave in 5 days, it's like, yep, sweet. We've given them a good trip. They only got to go to Victoria. Like, it's a big deal. And when we load them cows, we look at each other and go, nah, sweet, I reckon they'll be right. You know, like, have that empathy, have that care, have that bit of... And that's how we think, and that's how we do it.
Yeah. And so what is your favourite thing about living up here? What's the territory?
Obviously, my family now, like, two kids and Lise and the sunsets and where we live. And, you know, every now and then you look back at some old photos and... But now I've got a few mates who love fishing and I love me fishing. Trent DeWitt's too dear there at Rod and Rifle, but other than that, it's all right.
I'll keep that in there so we know.
Yeah. Nah, I just love it. I love it. I do like going away to South Australia every now and then, but it's always good to come back. And I think, I think you sort of, a lot of people I know that sort of go, stay up here for a while, and they go, oh, I'm going to go to Queensland, I'm going to go there, but everyone just seems to come back, which I can understand why.
Thank you, Brad, for your time, and thank you for listening to this podcast as we share the real stories of those working across the agricultural industries. We hope to empower you to share your story and maybe pick up a fun fact or two along the way, and if you know someone you want to hear from, send them our way. If you value what the Livestock Collective does, please subscribe or maybe even sponsor a podcast. Check out our website for more information.